Alright, time for another draftphysics.com. Debate physics also, but no debaters. No useful ones anyway. So, we're going to do the Professor Lewin experiment, the free momentum experiment, and talk about it again. But there won't be any counter arguments to anything I point out. And it'll just show the conspiracy in the sense that there really isn't any regard by most advocates for good debate, good argument, logic, and evidence. And, doing research on Einstein, you can see that, okay, that, Einstein went, left, in terms of, he did that relativity thing, but the rest of his life he spent trying to do something very unabstract, something grounded in terms of unifying and connecting and recognizing that, it's all the way back to the Newton statement. Newton didn't tell you what gravity was, but he told you what it wasn't. And what he's saying is you'd have to be a fucking imbecile, to think there's some magic force that makes things move. There's something there. Something's happening. Some physical thing is happening. That's why we call it physics, by the way. And you have to be insane, okay, if you think it's just magic. Einstein was saying the same thing, okay? This isn't just bullshit. There's a physical reality, okay? Physical shit is happening. And it doesn't poof, and it doesn't random, and it doesn't any of that crap. Okay, but anyway. And look what he got, unfortunately, he wasn't successful, and I think partly because he still thought math was the road to understanding. And I think that's a huge mistake. Math is just a clumsy tool, and it should be understood as that it's a simplification of the reality, and you're going to miss an awful lot of details if you're not really, really careful in how you construct your formulae. So I'm just saying it does smell. The very fact that people are, they use rhetoric like he wasted the rest of his life, or he just proves that scientists are no good once they pass 40 or something, or all this bullshit. And he worked harder, okay, and more diligently, in those later years than he did in the early years. The early years were almost frivolous physics versus how much more effort and attention he paid to the details later. But anyway, just part of the story of the bullshit, what science has become, and how it's, it's a 100-year story of just bullshit winning. But anyway, so somebody says, I didn't notice a comment of yours on the Alpha Phoenix video asking him to prove kinetic energy. Well, you don't know that comments don't work on YouTube most of the time, that there's lots of reasons for that to be true, that you didn't see it. And there's about 1,753 comments, so you went through it all to see, huh? So I just show it for the sake of showing it, right? I mean, what's the, doesn't, yes, I posted the comment. The fact that it probably isn't visible to anybody else isn't my fault, okay? So yeah, I pointed out I made a video, but more importantly, I'd like to request that you do a video proving the existence of kinetic energy. 300 years of science has been saying things take four times more fuel to go twice as fast, blah, 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 blah. Yet, in over 300 years, no experimental evidence. This should be important to people who give a shit about the integrity of their science and all the rest of it, that, you really don't have any evidence for this crap. I mean, any good evidence for a theory, and yet you're talking as if it's proven, nobody but, only imbeciles could possibly disagree, blah, 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 blah. All this bullshit. That's disgusting. Really, it is. Really. All right, so then the other idiot, some other person, probably of the idiot persuasion, frankly, posted this whole pile of shit. Sorry. I'm taking the experiment into molecular functions. Okay, so I'll just cursorily read through it. If the one mass object did not move back with 33 momentum, then heat would not be maintained in the system. So he doesn't know even what heat is in a system. So let's just say you have a bunch of molecules in a bucket, and you put a thermometer in and it says 57 degrees. That doesn't mean that each molecule is 57 degrees. It just means that the average temperature, that is the average momentum of the particles that are hitting the thermometer, comes out to 57. Some are hitting at 157. Some are hitting at 10. Okay, they're all hitting the thermometer with different amounts of temperature. Okay, and all you're getting is the average temperature within that particular system. All right, then heat would not be maintained in the system. So that's just bullshit. The system would cool down. So there's no cooling down unless you're doing what you're saying. Okay, there's no heating up or cooling down unless you do what you're saying, which is you invent momentum. That every time there's an interaction, somehow you make or lose energy in the interaction. Somehow you make or lose more momentum. So let's use the right word. Momentum is the subject. That somehow you keep changing the amount of momentum there is. You can't change the amount. I can smash a wrecked ball into a feather. Okay? Or I can smash a wrecking ball into the Empire State Building. The total amount of momentum being exchanged will be the same. All right? The ball will keep more with the feather. The ball will lose more when it hits the building. It's not any more complicated than that. Because each time the light object, i.e. a helium atom hitting an oxygen atom, the helium atom will stop. So says you. Okay, there's absolutely, you have no evidence that atoms stop when they interact with each other. Just like Newton's cradle or anything else, when unequal things interact with each other, there's very little likelihood that either one of them is going to do the stopping thing. Okay, and the oxygen atom will move at a slower speed. It doesn't matter. It's got the same, if it's captured its momentum, then like the lever or like other conversion devices, okay, most of the energy is maintained. Now, obviously, we don't have perfect conversion devices, but close enough, frankly. Okay, therefore, the motion of the system as a whole is slower. So none of that happens. The only way the motion gets slower is you have to take energy out of your bucket. You have to let it leak out. It has to leak out in some, with some form of momentum, has to leave the bucket. Otherwise, the bucket's going to stay exactly the same average temperature. All right, the oxygen atom wouldn't be able to speed up the helium atom because it's too slow. Yes, slow things can't make fast things. Just a fact, okay? But they can give a portion of their energy to the smaller object in proportion to their mass. So they can make it go as fast as they're going and therefore give away a portion of their energy. So a train can hit a cow. It can make the cow go the speed of the train, and then the cow can slide off the cow catcher. All right, and now the cow has 15 miles an hour or whatever the train's going. So the train has now given some of its energy to the cow. Duh. All right. The oxygen and helium atoms are at the same temperature. So that's where you went wrong. Okay, they're not at the same temperature. The system is full of a bunch of different velocities. And that's just a fact. That's the way it turns out. And it would take a... I don't know how long you'd have to have. I don't know what kind of system you'd have to create where you could buffer it enough to force everything to move the same speed. That doesn't seem very likely. At the same temperature, oxygen atoms move slower than helium atoms, which means the oxygen takes up less space than the helium atoms. So, obviously, how fast something's moving will dictate how much space it can travel in a certain amount of time. So if you're trapped between two walls, the faster you're going, the more you hit the walls. So yes, in that sense, you're more likely to get rid of your energy if there's some place to get rid of it too. But if the walls are made out of springs, well, it's not going to do you any good. All right. I mean, if the walls are elastic, you're not going to gain anything by hitting them more times. Takes up less space than the helium, so if you mix both gases together, volume should remain the same. Well, says you. But if we use your type of momentum, the volume of the gases would shrink as the helium slows down. So obviously there's no slowing down beyond the fact that you have a bigger object that's carrying more momentum. It's a 16-pound bowling ball. It will last longer. It will hit more pins and create more reflections, okay, because it gives less away to each pin, but it hits, it can push more pins. That's the simple truth of it. So the 8-pound ball loses its energy quicker, but it doesn't have more energy. Okay. All right. So that's enough of that. So I, you know, why take the experiment into some other realm where we all don't agree on the rules of how atoms bump into each other? So you have a simple enough experiment, all right? And you have to play this stupid game of pretending this is about something else when it's not about that, okay? It's about this, okay? So the Brozo is saying he has this, you know, his frictionalist cart bullshit nonsense, and then it proves and blah blah blah, but he has to spend days and days editing it to pieces, so he has to turn the video into a pile of shit of some kind. All right, so the simple idea is that we have an experiment, okay? So we'll just say this is the experiment. I'm going to do an experiment, and I'm going to put 100 watts in of energy. Okay, that's all I'm putting in. Okay, I took 100 watts and I'm putting it into the experiment. The experiment's going to produce, okay, 166 watts. Now, you tell me, if I proposed that I can do this, you would call me a nut. You would say, you can't do that. Prove it. Blah, blah, blah. You'd sit there and just rag about how the flat earth crazy fuck thinks he can make free energy. Because he has this non-energy, it takes no energy, and it's easy to make this box, this experiment. And it just automatically does this thing. It just creates 166 watts. Obviously, you just take the 66 off and put the 100 back in, and we have perpetual motion. So I've invented perpetual motion and free energy. Now, that's what Professor Lewin overtly does as an experiment, okay? So even though he says nature can finagle kinetic energy, but nature can't finagle momentum, now he says it pretty assertively. So he believes in conservation of momentum. He thinks that's one of the rules, the laws, like Newton's laws. That's one of the laws. Number four, you got to conserve the energy. And momentum is a kind of energy. You got to conserve it. It's important. So even though he says it, he does an experiment right in front of his class where, screw it. Now, the trick is the energy, okay, the energy comes out in two pieces. It comes out 33, comes out the side over here. And 133 comes out the bottom here. Okay, so that's the one little distinction we'll make. So I have 133 watts coming out of here, and I have 33 watts coming out of there. So that's the little difference. I mean, I could put the arrow this way. Okay, so 133 is coming out this side. You'd still say you can't do that. You'd still get it that, well, that's the same thing as this, shithead. I mean, making it go this way isn't going to undo the stuff coming out that side, you dope. Okay, it's still energy, it's still watts. Watts adds up. Watts is heat, essentially. Okay, you can't undo that. You've started with a blob this big, and you've made, you know, a blob this big plus a blob this big. You can't do that. All right, so this is what I'm being obliged to argue, okay, is... Now, I've thrown in the extra bonus, okay, of essentially proving that Professor Lewin's experiment was fake, okay? And even though he used a nice air cart and it was all pretty, I mean, I've proven that the two carts he used, you know, a one cart and a 2 cart. That's how they do this experiment. They throw a light thing at a heavy thing. So we have a 2 mass cart and a 1 mass cart. And what they're going to make happen, okay, is they're going to have this doing the 33 thing in this direction, and this one's going to do the 133 thing in this direction. Okay, so that's going to be how they're going to make this extra energy. And I've already shown that this cart, okay, it has different features on it. Okay, it has the spring, and then it has a little card for going through the reader, and you know, it has a spring on this side too, and it has a weight, and it has a blob of clay. Okay, this one is supposed to be twice the mass. So this piece of metal it starts with is twice as heavy, but it only has 1 card, not 2. So it's missing a card. It's missing this second spring here because it only has 1. You know, it's missing a second spring over here because it only has 1 over here. It's got only 1 metal bar on it, so it's missing an extra metal bar. And it doesn't have the first blob of clay or the second blob of clay. So it's missing 2 blobs of clay to be twice as massive. So I've pointed out how it's impossible for a reasonable person to say, like, if I did the experiment with these defects, they wouldn't be easily pointed out, and they'd be saying, "You cheated, you fuck. Come on, who are you trying to fool with this fucking experiment you did?" So if this was anybody else but Professor Lewin, so if this was a flat earther or some, you know, free energy Robert Ritchie nutball or some other kook, right, you'd be easily say, "Oh, look at all the flaws in this experiment. This is bullshit. This guy is shenanigans. I mean, it's not even got the 1 blob of clay, but I'm missing the second one too. Come on, too obvious. What's the blob of clay doing there anyway? Come on, too obvious." But no, okay, because it's Professor Lewin, somehow this shenanigans don't matter. This is a pristine, beautifully done experiment. We all should just hold it up and teach it as physics, and this is the way it should be done. This, come on, let's call it what it is. Lie. Okay, this lie should be the truth. Come on. I mean, I really have to argue this shit? So you won't even concede that, okay, that experiment we really can't count because it's too flawed. Come on, bullshit. So let's not pretend. And why is it bullshit? Why wouldn't he do it the right way? Oh, because it doesn't work. What would be the only explanation for him fucking it up? Right? Let's just say he didn't fuck it up on purpose. What would be the only excuse for him fucking it up? It's because it doesn't work if he doesn't fuck it up. And let's understand, we all, I think, even the Brozo concede, if we don't put the springs on it, it doesn't work at all. Okay, so if I have elastic objects, just merely elastic, it doesn't work at all. So objects that can transfer energy quite well, it won't work at all unless you have the springs on it. You can't, it's even harder to fake, let's put it that way. It's even harder to fake without the springs. But anyway, so you say there's no conspiracy, yet you'll unanimously defend this, all of you, okay, will defend this experiment, even though it's got obvious defects and obvious flaws, and it's obviously not got any integrity as a scientific experiment. And then you say, "We're not part of a conspiracy. We're not a mob." Well, I don't know what else is there to call it. It's so dishonest. Again, if anybody else did the experiment and had these obvious flaws in it, come on. Come on. So this is what I have to, it's obviously, the idea, it's, again, that I can say the words free momentum. All right, you're making extra momentum. You're doing an experiment and it's making free extra momentum. Momentum plus comes out. You won't concede that that can't happen, that your own physics says that's bullshit. You can't make free momentum without having free energy. that the two concepts are the same. Free energy and free momentum equal each other. You can't have free energy. Free energy, okay? And you can't have free momentum without having free energy. You must concede, right? That has to, conservation of momentum is really, really important. You know, or else you do have free energy. And you do understand that if it's this simple, we'd already have it. Somebody already would have found it, because billions of people in, you know, the last 200 years or so have died for a lack of energy. I mean, it kills people, the lack of energy, the expense of energy. Not having enough money to buy fuel has killed millions of people. So, of course, we would grab onto it if it was this simple. I just put 100 watts in, I get 166 out. All right. So, I'll erase and we'll go through the experiment piece by piece and try to figure out how do the people fuck it up. All right, I'm back. All right, so there's not much I can do about the fact that you people, you know, you have this concept of what energy is that's kind of mushy. Somehow you think heat is some sort of different thing of energy or manifestation, that movement isn't just movement. And you're just saying there's just in the universe masses, electrons, protons, and then there's bigger things, atoms, and then there's molecules, and then there's compounds. You know, and then there's bigger and bigger objects until you get to, you know, galaxies and shit. All right, and it all really is just about what's the total amount of this stuff. That's the mass of this thing. This thing's mass is decided by how much of this little tiny shit it has. And frankly, its energy, its total energy, has to do with how much this little stuff is moving. Now, some of the little stuff is just going back and forth, so that doesn't make any difference, right? Because that's not having any effect on whether this rotates or whether this moves somewhere on space. That crap, okay, that's its innate energy, okay? Just because it has, you know, these little bits in it, then sometimes the little bits don't go anywhere. They just jiggle around. So the jiggling energy doesn't get it anywhere. It doesn't create what we call a velocity that we see. So we know that some of the velocity, some of the energy, is the E equals mc squared part, you know, where the energy equals essentially the mass. All right. There's innate. There's a better word for that. Initial. There's another word for it. Well, anyway, latent energy. It's not doing anything, energy. You know, it's not the kind you can easily measure. But regardless, I mean, the idea is that obviously we're talking about these big things moving, okay, up from one place to another, and that they do it at a velocity, and we can measure that part of their movement. So the movement where the, you know, you can understand the car is like hot. It has a temperature. Well, you know the temperature isn't what you're measuring, you know, the energy of the temperature. When you're watching the car move down the road, you know the energy you're measuring is the energy of the atoms moving in this direction, not the atoms jiggling. You're not adding those things and saying the car has a certain amount of power or a capacity to do work, because that jiggling part won't make any difference when it hits the brick wall. That part isn't going to matter. All right. The part that's going to matter is the part moving, getting somewhere. The part going somewhere, that's the part that's going to matter. All right, that's the part that's the energy in the system that you're measuring. All right, so the problem with this idea is, okay, just so I have this black box that magically makes, okay, you know, I put the 100 in, I get the 133 out, and then I put the 133 in, okay, and I get 160. What the hell was it? I forget now. 170 something, and then I get, you know, I do it again, I got 240 something. Anyway, do it four times and I've doubled my amount of energy, let's just say. So it's 200 here. Okay. Just for simplicity. So that's the consequence, right? You can just see that you can keep increasing it by just hitting bigger objects. So this one is a 1, this one's a 2, this one's a 4, then I hit an 8. okay, and then I can just reverse it with a lever, as I've pointed out. Okay, put the object out here, fulcrum here, so I hit the heavy thing in here, I push the light thing out, and now I've essentially restarted the system, except now my one is moving, you know, my initial energy in is 400, because the lever also amplified it, but let's just say 200. All right, so I'm starting with 200, you know, and doing the same thing again. Just go from one box to a bigger box to a bigger box. Do the same experiment and put the lever over here, and obviously I can just keep generating more and more energy. So that's the implication of the theory that they're saying is rock solid basic physics. You can't do, you're an idiot if you don't accept our derivations. All right, so the other little fact you should know is that this whole thing starts with them saying momentum is real, okay, mv, and 1/2 mv squared is real. They're saying these are both real things and that they have a reason to combine them, because they have to be equal. They both have to be conserved. So because they both have to be conserved, we'll take derivations, you know, we'll fake, we'll lie about Newton and say Newton said F equals ma when he didn't say that. Okay, and then we'll combine, we'll convert this into a formula like this, and then we'll combine those two and create some kind of bullshit formula that tells us this happens. That when you go this way with the energy, you can subtract this energy. This energy is negative energy. And somehow this knocks off the 33 here, and therefore you only really have 100. When obviously that's not the truth. Obviously when an explosion happens and 100 goes this way, okay, you know, a piece of lead pipe flies off this way, and a piece of lead pipe flies off this way. No idiot thinks this piece of pipe, I undid that piece of pipe. The guy killed by this one isn't dead because there was another guy killed by one over here. I mean, it's just too silly. I mean, it is kind of mockable. Sorry, I'm being mocking, but I mean, it's a mockable argument that there's some kind of thing called a negative energy that undoes. You know, I shoot heat out that way, and all of a sudden I can undo the heat by shooting heat the other way. No, I can't. Yeah, no, the flame that I blew that way isn't going to get undone by any flame in any other direction. Energy is a real thing, and you can't undo it. It's not undoable. It's not deletable. You can't delete energy. Jeez. Alright, so let's just go over the experiment one more time. So here you have a one mass object and a two mass object. Twice the mass. Alright, and you have a spring. And so you're going to put this, you're going to give this a mass and a velocity. Okay, so it has a one mass, and so we're going to just say the velocity is 2. Okay, 2 velocity. And it is now going to be collided into the spring on the 2 object. Let's just say it doesn't really matter which way you do the spring, because its mass will be part of the mass of the object. You know, you're weighing the object with the spring. Okay. And what they're saying happens is going to happen in the experiment is this is going to leave, okay, with 2 mass. Okay. All right. And 2/3 of this velocity. So it's going to leave with 3. Okay, velocity. Yeah, that all shows up. Close enough. And that this is going to, so this one's going this way. So I've increased the total momentum. Because if I do that simple math, I come up with a bigger number than this total number. It's bigger than 2. Obviously, 2 times 1 is 2 plus the extra 33. So I've made free momentum in that direction. Just a fact. Then I have the bonus of a 33 this way. So 0.33 is going to go back this way. So I'm not even using part of the energy. You could argue in a way this part of the energy is going to stay in this object. It's going to still be moving, And again, direction doesn't matter to energy. Direction is kind of easily changed, okay? You can change something's direction and maintain all of its momentum. We're doing it all the time. You know, gravity does it. You know, it's using energy, gravity. There are ways to do it without consuming any energy. I just can't think of them off the top of my head right now. Obviously, the spring does it. So if I just had a brick wall here, you'd understand that. So they don't do the experiment with a brick wall because it doesn't work. Yeah. You understand that the one mass would go in with the momentum of two. Okay, and the fact is, you know, that's what it's going to leave with. You're just going to compress the spring. The spring will store the energy. The spring will give it back. Now, yes, there's some percentage loss. All right, and we don't bother counting all these little percentages, but, yeah, that doesn't matter. If you're losing 3% of the energy, I mean, you know, it's a real loss of energy, blah, blah, blah. And that sometimes is the reason why perpetual energy doesn't work, is just because we can't make a lossless system, because there always is some sort of friction or air drag or some other bullshit to steal the energy. Like a pendulum is almost, you know, it proves the idea you're so close to being perpetual. You know, you put a pendulum inside of a vacuum and, you know, it'll go much longer, and it's just this little tiny bit of energy you're losing here, you know, and that's it. So you're leaking the evidence, the energy, so such a little tiny a bit. Just imagine how, you know, if we could just get rid of that little tiny loss, well, yeah, then there's nothing stopping it from continuing on its way. Yeah, you also have whatever, the tension in the stringy thing, but that could probably be negated just because once it's stretched, and it's not going to worry about it as much. Anyway, going far afield. So this is it. You know, so they say this is a vector quantity. Somehow you can do this minusing thing, and you can say that somehow because I made extra energy this way, I can undo it by pushing energy this way. And again, like I said, if this is a closed box, you can see it's free energy. There's no way to argue that this undoes that. It can't undo it. Okay, it's motion. All the motion counts. You're just counting how much stuff is moving. So this goes all the way back to Joule, who was basically proving that, you know, every time you do an experiment, you know, you're leaking a little bit of this heat stuff, you know. And the whole point was is that you could do the experiment where that's all you do. You just leak heat. So you can actually do an experiment where the only work you do is to make something hot. And you don't do anything else. And in a way, that heat will tell you how much total energy you put in. But every other experiment, basically the argument was, is that every device, every machine, like he was comparing steam engines to electrical engines, okay, and he wanted to find out which one was more efficient. And the key to finding it out was, is which one is producing more unusable heat. And that was really the equation, was, yeah, just figure out which one is losing more of the energy to heat, and you understand which one is going to do more work. All right, be more efficient in performing its task, given a different, an amount of fuel in heat. Again, you know, in the form of heat, you know. You make something hot to turn the turbine. You make something hot, you know, to push the piston, you know. Same difference. So you're using heat to make motion, and the motion will eventually just create more heat. Because the only way the motion goes away, the only way the pendulum dies, is it has to heat, okay, this fulcrum and leak the energy as infrared radiation. All right. So we'll have to draw again.
I drew other stuff.
Yeah, all right, we're back. All right, so it's a very simple experiment. All right, just crashing the one, going the velocity into the two, and what are the possibilities? Okay, so without springs, people concede it doesn't work. So now, somehow we're saying the spring holds the magic. And you're kind of, if you're like me, you're saying, well, how can it do that? Right? So what's the features of the spring? Well, the spring is compressible. So neither one of these objects can be dented or compressed. That's the theory. All right? So the spring is the thing in between the two things that can be. And the idea is it's going to store the energy. And the energy is going to be in a form, like this could be moving this way and this can be moving that way. They can be both moving. One of them can be moving or the other one can be moving. And the fact is the spring is going to compress based on the net amount of motion, okay? That is, the opposites are going to add to be extra energy. So if this is going 30 and this is going 20, you would understand, well, 20, you'd understand that you got 50 worth of compression. And if this was going 50 and this was going 0, well, you have 50 worth of compression. That's with equal masses, sorry. You know, this one does have twice the mass, so you have to recognize that this 30 would be 60. So forgive that error. Anyway, yeah, you just total it up. And so there really can't be anything. The spring is just the weakest link, so it's going to be the thing where the energy is going to go. It's the easiest place for the water to go, so to speak. So it's like the, you know, if you didn't have gravity and you drop a rock into the ocean, right, the water just goes straight up and keeps going because it doesn't want to go this way because there's a bunch of molecules in its way. There's very few in this way. So if it goes this way, okay, it's a free ride. So that's where the water is going to end up going. It's this way. This gets to the bucket argument. So we'll do that tomorrow probably. You know, it's a relativity argument. Too silly. Anyway. Alright, so there can't be anything magic about the spring. It's just a storage device. It's just saying, how many pounds of pressure are you going to push on me? That's all it's asking. It's just saying, what's the pounds? How many pounds of weight are you going to push onto me? So it's doing what a scale is doing that's weighing you, okay? You're standing on a scale. The scale is a spring. The spring is just asking, how much do you weigh? Well, you weigh what gravity collects. You're a bucket. You're going to collect gravity. And you're going to be basically just measuring how much mass you have. How many little bits of crap do you have that are going to interrupt the gravity and push down the spring with a weight? And it'd be the same thing if I move you, okay, into a spring, okay, going sideways, so we take gravity out of it. I have to move you. I have to give you a velocity, or the spring says you don't weigh anything. You don't weigh something till I move you into it. That's your weight. That's your momentum, okay? It's the same difference. And the spring is asking the same question. And springs have been reliably tested, okay? Hooke's law or whoever the hell it is, you know, I mean, you know, twice the weight, twice the stretch, you know. So it's a reliable object. So what can go wrong here? How can you possibly make something go with more energy in the other direction? You've just compressed the spring. It doesn't care who's moving what way. You compress the spring. The spring has the energy in it now. The energy of this object has compressed the spring. Right now, this has got zero velocity, and this has zero velocity, and the spring has stored the weight. So the 50 pounds that this was pushing, it pushes the spring 50 pounds worth. This has no more pounds to push with, so now the spring just gives it back, and it gives it back based on how easy it is to push the two things. Right, so it's basically just going to say, this is twice as hard to push, so it's twice as hard to get the energy into. And this one, you know, but the idea is it's really just going to say, here's the energy, okay? I'm going to give it back 50 pounds of pressure, and I'll just keep going down from 50 to 49 to 48 to 47 to 46, right? The spring is just releasing the energy, and it's going to essentially just divide it between the two objects. This will go half the speed away, and this will go, you know, twice as fast because it's half as light. So all you're really changing is a spring can allow you, like a lever, okay, can allow you to convert a big heavy object into the movement of a light object. So you can give a light object, you know, a heavy object with a little velocity, and you can create a light object with a high velocity. Well, springs allow you to do some of that, because once you put the energy in, it doesn't matter. It's just 50 pounds of energy, 50 pounds of pressure it's applying, and now it doesn't care who has it, and it's just going to divide it between the two of them. Okay, so in some sense, where in the real experiment, this one mass would reflect, you can get rid of some of the reflection, okay, by using a spring. So you will change the outcome. The spring will change the outcome of the experiment. If you just do the elastic experiment, or you do the experiment with the spring, you will be able to send more of the energy this way, but you'll send less this way. Now that's the important feature. All right, so what else do I want to say? The spring can't make energy, so the point is that this isn't going to explain how this left with two-thirds the velocity. It can't leave with two-thirds and be twice the mass. It's too much energy. So how does it get fucked up? Well, it gets fucked up because, you know, we're not very good at measuring the velocity. So the thing's moving. So we want to know how fast this object's moving. Well, we can take pictures of it, right, and watch it. But the pictures we're taking are video cameras, and video cameras are a little bit sloppy about their frame. Some frame is that long, another frame is that long, another frame is this long. Yeah, the average frame turns out to be correct, but they're not too good. So if you count this frame, and this frame, you get a distance. If you count this frame, and this frame, you get a different distance. So that's a little dangerous. And you have to count a number of them, which means that you have to watch the object go for quite a distance, which means its velocity went from 50 here to 48 here. So it slowed down by the time it got to the end. So your number isn't the real velocity. It's a fake velocity. So there's lots of, you know, so you can get timing gates, and well, timing gates have the flaw of, you know, they do have a, Each one is going to have a little different diode in it, and so they're going to have to measure. But you can make them so they're pretty accurate. So it's a pretty good way, frankly. It's pretty hard to fuck it up in a major way, and you're just basically sending something to block the beam. Now, obviously, you can't send, if you're sending something through a beam, if you send it through this way, it's going to give you a different number than if you send it through this way. This is going to be longer. This is going to be shorter. So you do have to be kind of careful about what you're sending through the timing gate. I'm thinking of using, you know, a strobe. Okay, so you get reliable frames, and you get frames. You know, if you take the picture of something moving with a strobe, you'll get a very clear image and a very clear unit of time. So when the thing changes its position, I guess I should draw it over here. So when the object changes, you know, you get a picture here and a picture here, and you have very reliable time units between the photographs, and you'll just be able to measure this distance. You won't have to worry about measuring more, you know, and averaging, because there won't be any irregularity. And so you can just do one unit. So it's a very short amount of distance traveled. You can get the velocity for that short distance. So it has some advantages. But anyway, all this comes down to is this experiment is fuck-up-able, okay, because, yes, measuring velocities is a little tricky. And we've seen it, okay. And obviously, you can have things on a slope, you know, so you can do the, well, look, I dropped the one mass onto the two mass, and the two mass gained energy. Well, of course it gained energy if you're not, you know, on a level surface. So it's no point in going through all the different ways to fail. The point is it's a little bit delicate, and it's got to be done carefully. And as Professor Lewin demonstrated, it's easy to cheat also. So you can cheat the hell out of it. Just don't have the right masses. Put a spring on that's the wrong tension. Lots of things you could do to screw it up. But the fact is, making extra energy is a real thing. So if you're going to claim that I crashed a 1 into a 2, and I made the 2 have more momentum, that's a bold claim, brother. And you really should have something, you know, you really have to have a pretty solid experiment, because frankly, that's free energy. And if it's that simple, I'm patenting it, okay? It's mine. I own it, all right? So, I mean, it's just obviously can't be true. So if that's the outcome you're getting, you're doing something wrong. I mean, is there some other conclusion that can be drawn? You have to be doing something wrong. If you're making free momentum, you're doing something wrong, because free momentum is free energy. So until you convince me that free momentum isn't free energy, there's really nothing to talk about, because there's just no way you can say this is real physics. And you're only making yourself look like an asshole if you're going to say, I have proven it. Okay, here's your empirical, undeniable, pristine, done by the emperor-approved experiment. Proving something that's impossible. I don't know why I have to keep going over and over this. I mean, it's just, free momentum is a crazy idea. It can't be physics. Physics can't do that. I should just be able to say that and everybody applauds and say, yes, yes, of course. You should be saying, yes, yes, of course. Yes, it's impossible. Free momentum is impossible. I can't just take an object, put it down, and say, go, and it goes for free. I can't do that. And it means I can't do any of this other crap too, because it's essentially the same thing. Making a little black box and I press the button instead of saying go, there's no difference. Okay, it's the same thing as me just saying go and it happening. You put 100 in and you get 166 out. You can't do that in this physical universe. It doesn't allow you to do that. So don't tell me you've proven it. Sorry. You have to explain how it's possible for it to happen if you're going to claim a proof. All right. Anyway, enough of a video. Till the next time and such. Oh, this is just so dismal. Oh, I might as well talk to ants. Anyway, so till the next time and such. I might as well talk to ants.com. Yeah, maybe I'll waste $17 on that. I mean, the price of domain names has gotten ridiculous. Ridiculous. They're offering money, though, for my Do Not Go domain name. And I'm saying, why would somebody want that? You know, what? I mean, you know, I did it for a very specific reason when I was fighting the search engine wars. You know, there was a place called go.com that was a terrible racket. And so that's why I created the domain name Do Not Go, because it had a very specific thing I was arguing with, go.com. So it sort of made sense. But it's hard to make sense out of it for anything else. Yeah, so anyway. See, maybe I'll sell. I don't know. Anyway, till the next time and such.